Discussing the Ramban and his book, Igeret HaRamban, which is not really a book, it's a letter. It's a two-page letter. It's a two-page letter to his son. But let's talk a little bit about the Ramban. Ramban was born in Gerona, in Spain, 1194, where he grew up and studied. So Ramban was Rav Moshe ben Nachman of Gerona. So they called him Gerondi. Gerona, they called him Gerondi. And he was the cousin of Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona, who wrote the Share Teshuvah. He's the cousin of Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona. They both came from Gerona, right? Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona, he was more influenced by the French rabbis, which we're going to talk about. He was one of the ones, individuals who put the Rambam in Cherem, one of the individuals. And that's why he wrote his book Share Teshuvah. He was going around doing Teshuvah for the fact that he put the Rambam in Cherem, which we're going to talk about. He said he went to every synagogue in France, apologizing in public to the Rambam. The Rambam was already dead. So, but it's interesting, he's apologizing in public to the Rambam, because he put him in the Cherem. Anyway, let's talk a bit about the Ramban. So he's born in 1194, and he died in Israel. So he moved from Spain to Israel at a very late age, age of 70-something, we're going to talk about. He was forced out of Spain, which we're going to talk about. He was a descendant of Rabbi Yitzhak ben Ruben of Barcelona, and a cousin of Rabbi Yonah, we talked about. Among his teachers were Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar and Natan ben Meir. And some people say he was instructed in Kabbalah by his countryman Azriel of Gerona, who was a disciple of Isaac the Blind. Isaac the Blind was one of the big Kabbalists at that time. So he studied with one of his students, of Isaac the Blind. The Rashba, Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, was his student. Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, who became the chief rabbi of Spain, was his student. And he also wrote commentaries on the whole of Talmud, Rashba. Rashba says that Ramban studied medicine. So Ramban was also a doctor. So just like Ramban was a doctor, Ramban was also a doctor. However, Ramban, not like Rambam, says it's better not to go to the doctors, it's better just to pray to God. He's very much into the power of God. And he can create Hashem, does miracles all the time. Nature is not nature, nature is miracles. Big dispute between Rambam and Ramban. How far did miracles go? Everything's a miracle in the Ramban. So therefore, why do you want to go to a doctor when you can go straight to God and have God cure you? So the Rambam says, no, what are you talking about? It's a pasuk. The pasuk says, Virapo yirape. The permission was given to a doctor to heal. Ramban says, I agree, permission was given to a doctor. I'm also a doctor. But a high level of relieving is, don't go to God. If you can avoid a doctor and just pray and fix yourself by prayers, that's ideal. That's the ideal scenario. So it's a higher level of living. The Ramban was into a higher level of living. He wasn't talking about... Ramban was talking about the regular person. He wasn't talking about tzaddik or whatever. Ramban was on a higher madriga. You can see he was talking about a different level of person. According to the response of Rashba, he said Ramban studied medicine, and during his teens already, he became a big Talmid Chacham. At 16 years old, he began writing his halachot, which we're going to talk about. And he started writing his book, Milchamot Hashem. We talked about just earlier the Rif. Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, one of the great Rif, one of the three great foundations of the Shulchan Aruch. Who are the three great foundations of the Shulchan Aruch? Rambam, Rif, and Rosh. The Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, and the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who was much later, from both of them. So it's interesting, we're going to pick two out of three Sephardim and one Ashkenazi. But the Ashkenazi already in Spain. Rabbi the Rosh was already in Spain. He became the chief rabbi of Toledo, big city of Spain. They appointed him as the chief rabbi. A very, very nice gesture. Rosh ran away from Germany, soon in Maharam in Rottenburg. And they put Maharam in Rottenburg. The Germans put Maharam in jail. And they ransomed him off. And Maharam in Rottenburg said, not allowed to redeem me. No one's allowed to redeem him. He died in jail. After his death, a rich man redeemed his body. And his only request was, I want to be buried next to him. So if you go to the grave today, Maharam in Rottenburg, you'll find still there. Him and the rich man who redeemed him are right next to each other. Mm. That's the only thing he wanted. I want to be buried next to him. That's a big zechut. Be buried next to Maharam in Rottenburg. Anyway. So, the Rashba was chief rabbi of Spain. And that was his student. He's one of his big students, the Rashba. So the Ramban defends the Rif against all criticisms of Rav Zerachia Halevi of Gerona. And that was tendency, to defend the previous rabbis against the new rabbis' criticisms. Later rabbis want to criticize the old rabbis, I'm on the old rabbi's side. I'm a conservative. I want to defend the previous rabbis. So according to the view of the Ramban, the wisdom of the rabbis, the Mishnah, the Talmud, the Geonim, unquestionable. You don't question these rabbis. These are greats. Very famous, that's what the Gemara says. If they were like angels, we are like human beings. If they were like human beings, we are like donkeys, and not like the donkey Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, donkey was very special. He could tell the difference between tithe food, untithe food, Shabbat, not Shabbat. So we wouldn't be on the level of that donkey. We had different donkeys. But so that was his tenet. That was his. He took that literally, and he says, "Listen, these guys were angels. We are human beings. Who are we arguing with them? Who do we argue with them?" So that's the perspective of Ramban, which a lot of other rabbis at his time, Rambam, Ibn Ezra, they were open to criticize it. He himself criticized Avraham Avinu. The Ramban himself criticized it. Yeah. On the one hand, you're allowed to criticize the rabbis of Mishnah and Talmud, but he criticized Avraham Avinu. Right? Avraham Avinu left Mitzrayim. Who told him to leave? He left Canaan. Who told him to leave Canaan and go to Mitzrayim? Hashem didn't tell him. It doesn't say Hashem told him go to. Later on, Yaakov, Hashem tells Yaakov go to Mitzrayim. Avraham wasn't told by Hashem. Why did he have to tell Paro that it's his sister? Sarah's his sister. Who told him? So Ramban attacks him. He attacks Sarah for mistreating Hagar. So it's interesting, with all his conservative tendencies, it's interesting how he's a commentator on the Torah. So he's commentating on the Torah. He didn't spare any criticism of our greats, which is interesting. So he's defending the early rabbis, but he's not defending the Avot. Criticizing the Avot. By the way, you can't say that today. You can't say anything against the Avot. Some circles, they won't let you say anything against the Avot. You don't say anything against the Avot. But I'm saying it's not Avot, it's not me, it's the Ramban. Okay, who says it? Okay. So anyway, I'm just telling you what the Ramban says. It's the Ramban. It's not me, I'm not saying it. Chas v'shalom, I won't say it. I won't criticize the Avot. Why would I criticize the Avot? It's not me, it's the Ramban. I'm just telling you what the Ramban says. Ramban says not to question any rabbi in the Mishnah and the Talmud and the Geonim. He says, we bow before them. Even if we don't understand their words, we submit to them. Just like Rashi says, right? Amin or small. If they tell you your left is your right and your right is your left, Ramban follows that thing. We can't understand them, they're right. We don't understand them, they're right, and we're wrong. Whatever they say, they're right. So, all right. So it's the reason, the question is, why was he like that? And the answer is because the Jews in his time were accepting Greek philosophy. That's the trouble. There were new ideas boiling into Jewish life, and he was trying to conserve and go back to the previous traditions. And that's why he was anti the Rambam's Mori Nevuchim. Ramban, in many, he quotes it and he argues with it. It's contrary to the Torah. He quotes the Mori Nevuchim Allah, and he argues with it. So the Rambam's Guide to the Perplexed, the Mori Nevuchim, gave rise to the tendency to use allegories, say that the Torah is an allegory. The flood may have been an allegory, the fight of Yaakov with the angel was an allegory, he didn't really fight with an angel. Rambam says you can't fight with an angel. You see an angel in a vision, the three guests, the angels who came to the Avraham Avinu are not really there, it was all a vision. It's all a vision, going back from the Hashem looking at him, you can't talk to Hashem, it's all a vision. So Hashem comes to visit Abraham in his vision. And then he sees the angels in his vision. And he fights with, and the Sodom and the messages, the three, all vision. Yaakov Avinu, fighting with the angel, goes to sleep, and he fights with the angel in his sleep, in his vision. So that was the Rambam. Ramban says, no, what are you talking about? We're making the whole Torah into parables. It really happened, these things really happened. So, in 1238, the rabbis who were anti-Rambam, they asked him for help. Because they had also been excommunication was cheap in those days. The followers of Rambam excommunicate the ones against him, and the ones against him excommunicate them. So they excommunicate each other. The rabbis were busy fighting each other. Pro-Rambam, anti-Rambam. So they tried to enlist his support. The anti-Rambam group tried to enlist the support of Ramban. And Ramban writes a letter to the communities of Aragon, Navarre, and Castile, in which he, with great respect, he professed the Rambam. I don't share the views of the anti-Rambam camp, and I don't share the views of the anti-Rambam camp. I don't like what the Rambam writes in Mori Nevuchim, but I'm not going to fight with the Rambam. That's his view. Respect the Rambam. So he draws attention to the value of the Rambam and holds very highly of the Mishneh Torah. Follow the Mishneh Torah. And the proof, look at this, he says, Mishneh Torah is not just lenient, it's also strict in some places. Like if he's strict, that's a good sign. According to Ramban, if he's strict, that's a good sign. Because he's telling the truth. He's not just lenient, he's not just wishy-washy. Rambam's not wishy-washy, when it comes to halakha, tells you. He's no leniency. Even sometimes he's more stringent. That's a very positive factor, according to Ramban. However, the Ramban's guide to the perplexed, Ramban is defending also. He says, listen, it wasn't written for the mainstream. It was written for those, as Rambam writes in his title, Moreh Nevochim, Utha Navoch, a person who's lost. It's written for the lost people already, people who are into philosophy, people who are into Greek philosophy, and they need chizuk. That's what the Rambam wrote it for. He wrote it for them, on their level, to explain to them how it fits in. All the Greek philosophy fits into according to the Torah. The Torah Greek philosophy can be reconciled. It can be reconciled. Just like today, there are people who want to reconcile science and Judaism, right? The 6 days of creation, you can reconcile it. How you reconcile it, different issue. So that's what Ramban explained, the Rambam, to other people who want to put him in Kherim. Number one is you have to accept the Mishneh Torah. You have to accept the halakha of the Rambam. You want to argue with the Mishneh Torah, it's not written for you. It wasn't written for you. It wasn't written for you rabbis. It was written for the guys and the professors and the colleges. It was written for the philosophers. Okay, now we come to there's a few letters he wrote to his sons. One letter is called Igeret HaKodesh. And again, another big debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. Rambam seems to say that a man should try to keep away from relationships, physical relationships, even with his own wife. Limited as much as possible. As if it's not the way to holiness. It's not the path of holiness. Ramban says, what are you talking about? He wrote Igeret HaKodesh. This is the main path of holiness. That is the holiest act a person can engage in, which is producing children. Producing next generation is the holiest act a person can get. Tremendous debate. And he wrote this letter to his son, Igeret HaKodesh, as a wedding gift. So some people read it before the weddings. I don't know if they wrote a book about it. All these letters he wrote, it became a book. Right? I don't know if it was written a book about the Igeret HaKodesh. That'd be more... okay. So he wrote it as a wedding present. It's holy. All bodily functions are holy. There's no such thing as a dirty function of your body. Body functions are holy. And none of its normal impulses and actions can be regarded as objectionable. So in other words, there's a way, everything is holy. You just have to make it holy. You have to sanctify it. Everything can be used as a tool. For good or for bad, for unholy and holy. And he writes, he has a book called Torat HaAdam. And Torat HaAdam deals with laws of Avelut. Hilchot Avelut. Ramban's laws of Avelut. He has a book, Torat HaAdam, which the Shulchan Aruch quotes many times. The mourning rites, the burial customs. And he criticizes people who say man should be above pain. A person should not feel the pain of the relatives. Right? It's a natural tendency to feel pain. Essentially, Rambam also says that. Rambam says that a Kohen has to defile himself to his seven relatives. So the guy, Kohen, says, you know, I don't defile myself. We force him to defile himself. Right? Imagine the Kohen says, I want to be Machmir. I'm going to defile myself. The Rambam says, no, he has no feelings. How can he be a Kohen? He has to show his feelings. He has to show emotion. The Rambam agrees. Rambam says, a person has to show emotion. And that's what we learn. The laws of mourning are for you to show emotion. A person should not be like a stone. It's a very powerful idea. Okay, we're not Stoics. So on the one side, there are people who say, you know, we should be Stoics. Whatever God does, good. Should be for the best. Comes to the Torah and move on. What about all laws of mourning then? And the answer is no. It shouldn't be to that level. A person should feel and say Gamzu L'tuva. A person should feel the pain and cry and say, I accept God's will, but I feel the pain. And that's a very powerful idea. A man should not be indifferent to both pleasure and pain. It's against the law to be indifferent to pleasure and pain. You have to empathize. But how can you empathize with someone if you don't feel it yourself? We know that the law is that a person cannot be on the Sanhedrin unless he has children. Imagine, a rabbi who has no children can't be on the Sanhedrin. Maybe the greatest rabbi in the world. How can I sentence someone else's child to death if I don't have a child? I've got to take that into account. The feelings of loss, you know, it's not a joke. I'm killing off someone's child. The parents, they're going to mourn and this and that. So I've got to have the child as well. I've got to be able to empathize. So it's important. It's Okay, he also talks about Gilgul. Ramban is one of the first commentators on the Torah to talk about Gilgul, the idea of reincarnation. And what does he talk about? He talks about the laws of Yibum. Laws of Yibum, levirate marriage. Why is the levirate marriage? To bring another generation. It says, the name of the deceased. Have a child, the name of the deceased. It doesn't mean the child's going to have the same name. It means he's going to be the deceased, as Ramban says. The deceased soul is going to come back into him because he didn't fix his soul. He didn't have children, so he didn't fix his soul. So then he's going to have a new child. The child's going to be his... Amazing. The child of which inherits not only the name of the brother of his father, but also his soul, and continues his existence on the earth. Obviously, we have to understand that it's not the whole soul, it's partial soul, whatever it is, part of the soul. And we talked about resurrection also, the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. Rambam says resurrection is totally, it's physical, everyone agrees it's physical, and that will be, according to Ramban, Olam Haba. Ramban says it's not Olam Haba. Olam Haba is purely spiritual. Ramban says the body will evolve into a soul. Because there's hope for the body as well. The body will be resurrected and evolve into soul. Just like Eliyahu Navi, his body evolved. Moshe Rabbeinu. This is that we talked about, the 6 days in the cloud. You remember that? Mm-hmm. He was in the cloud for 6 days to transform him from a human being into an angel. And the Torah says 6 days the cloud rested on the mountain. Right? It doesn't say on the mountain, it says on it. On him or it. So the Gemara has a discussion. Was it 6 days on the mountain or was it 6 days on him, on Moshe Rabbeinu? Why 6 days on Moshe Rabbeinu? To transform him to an angel. To take out all the food and drink, all physicality from him and transform him to an angel. Otherwise, how can he be in heaven? Can you imagine? So out of the 40 days in heaven, it wasn't really 40 days. It was 34. It was 6 days, interesting, transformation, and 34 days up. Because you can't just beam yourself up like that. You have to be beamed up. You have to be into the process of beaming up. Amazing. 6 day process. That's a wild idea, but it makes sense. Makes sense. So the whole body will be transformed into a soul. That's Ramban. His commentary on the Torah was the last work he wrote. It's interesting. You think it's the first work he wrote. Last thing he wrote is commentary on the Torah. Imagine. The guy studying all his life. The peak of his learning is his commentary on the Torah. It's amazing. I say his peak should be the commentary on the Talmud. Really, his commentary. His commentary on the Talmud is very, very complex. More so because it's very brief. It's very brief, and you have to learn his student to understand him. You learn the Rashba, then you can understand the Ramban. Hopefully. Because without the Rashba, you can't learn the Ramban. Ramban is so deep and so brief, it's very hard to understand. But his commentary of the Torah is very beautiful. Why? Because number one is he quotes Rashi. And then he tells you if he agrees with Rashi. Usually disagrees with Rashi. He quotes Rambam, disagrees with Rambam. He quotes others. It's not just, I say this. No. First, I'm reckoning with respect. I bring the previous commentators and I comment on them as well. And then I give my opinion. Ababinel does the same thing. Very similar to that. He quotes and then he argues. He quotes and asks questions. Very beautiful. Very beautiful. So this is good respect. Showing respect to the holy authorities, which he does. He shows respect to Rambam by quoting him. And disagreeing with him in respectfully. He doesn't say he's an idiot. Doesn't say he's like the Ravad. Right, the Ravad says this man speaks with hot air. And he's a Balgava. Yeah.
Were there any rabbinic authorities against the Ramban?
I don't think there's any. Because he was a consensus builder. Yeah. The Ramban was more a consensus builder. He never really fought with anyone. He had his views, but respect.
I thought it was the Ramban versus the Balamor or something.
Yeah, but again, with respect.
Yeah, with respect.
Rav Zerachi Alevi wrote a commentary against the Rif, and he asked questions of the Rif, and the Ramban answered the questions. Right. He was respectful. He didn't have a fight with him. He didn't hate him.
Right, not
fight. But I'm saying, sometimes it got very bad. The followers of the Rambam against the people who want to put him in Kher was terrible. So Ramban kept out of it. Very smart. Keep away from fights. So respectful to both sides. He was respectful to both sides. And he says, listen, you have to explain. You have to understand what the Rambam was writing for and which audience he was writing for. Okay. So let's just go back to his first commentary on the beginning of creation. Which is very revolutionary. Because he talks about a transition of something from nothing. No one talks about this. Ramban talks about how Hashem created something from nothing, but there was a transitionary stage. It's wild. It's wild. In other words, you can't make something from nothing, boom, like that. It's transitions. So Ramban talks about transitions. And the Kabbalah also talks about transitions. So he got it from Kabbalah. So look what he says. Now listen to the correct and clear explanation. So obviously he quotes someone else. Listen to correct and clear explanation of the verse. Hashem created all things from absolute non-existence. We know that. We have no word in Hebrew for bringing forth something from nothing except for one word, bara. Bereshit bara. Bara means to create something from nothing. Yotzer is something from something else. Bara is something from nothing. The general rule. Bara means something from nothing. Only Hashem is a bore. We call Hashem bore olam. He is the creator of the world. I'm not a bore. I'm a bore. I'm a yotzer. But I can't be a bore. A bore. No one else can be a bore. And that's why I use this in our brachot. Bore, mine, besamim. Bore, peri, haetz. Bore. What does that mean? He creates it from nothing. He created it from nothing. Something from nothing. Everything that exists under the sun above was not made from non-existence at the outset. Look at this. This is revolutionary. It's stages. Ramban starts up talking about stages. The sun was not created from something from nothing. It was at the beginning, but evolved from a different stage. This is amazing. Instead, he brought forth from total absolute nothing a very thin substance, devoid of corporality, but having a power of potency, fit to assume form. I would say these are atoms. Okay, these are made particles. Right. I don't know what they were. Fits it very nicely. This is first came the particles, and then that's the first mass was particles. It fits very nicely. Had a power of potency fit to assume form and to proceed from potentiality into reality. So energy into mass. We can transform mass into energy. We can't transform energy into mass. Hashem can transform energy into mass. This was the primary matter created by Hashem. After this, he did not create anything, but he formed and made from the matter he already created. It's evolution. It's kind of evolution. Hashem created something from nothing, and then he finished off the products. He created basically building blocks of which are particles or molecules or whatever. Amazing. This is revolutionary. He attacks the Greek philosophers, especially Aristotle, frequently criticizes the Rambam's biblical interpretations. Okay. He says, no man can share in the Torah of our teacher Moses unless he believes that all our affairs, whether they concern masses or individuals, are miraculously concerned. Everything is miracles. Nature is miracles, not like Rambam. Rambam says, Hashem created, that's miracles. After that, Hashem created nature, and nature is not miracle. A miracle is anti-nature. A miracle is above nature. So, Ramban says, everything is miracles. If I'm alive today, it's a miracle. If you're alive today, it's a miracle. If you're walking on the earth and doesn't melt under our feet, it's a miracle. We see this in Hawaii. And he has three other beliefs. So essentially, Rambam gave us 13 principles of faith. Ramban gives us four. Number one is, everything is miracles. Number two, we believe in creation out of nothing. Number three, we believe in Hashem is all-powerful. And we believe in divine providence. Hashgacha Pratit. Four principles of faith, Ramban. In 1263, Ramban, up to then, it seems like he had a very nice life. He was chief rabbi of Catalonia. Untroubled life. He's now 70 years old. And then he's called upon in 1263 to debate this priest, Pablo Cristiani, who was a former Jew, ex-Jew convert to Christianity, unfortunately, and who was sent by the Dominican Master General Raymond de Peñafort to King James I of Aragon with a request. The king ordered Ramban to respond to charges against Judaism. So Pablo Cristiani was sent by the church to convert Jews to Christianity. Just like he converted to Christianity, he wants others to convert to Christianity. So now, how is he going to convert Jews to Christianity? He can't do it by quoting the New Testament. They're not going to believe him. Right? New Testament. We don't believe the New Testament. He has to quote from our sources to prove that our rabbis believe that JC was a Mashiach. Public Christianity is now going to quote from our sources to prove. So who's better to refute him than the Ramban? Ramban. He knew the whole Talmud by heart. So the subjects they discussed was, number one is, had the Mashiach come already? Because the Christians believe he came already. Number two is, when the rabbis or the prophets talk about the Mashiach, is it a human being or is it someone, an angel? What kind of form? Is it divine or is it just a human being? So Krishna is obviously, but he's a divine. We believe it's a human being. Mashiach is going to be a human being just like you and me. Right? He's not divine. So that's what he had to argue with. So Ramban argued, all the prophets regard the future Messiah as a human being, a person of flesh and blood and not as divine. So there's no JC. JC can't be divine. We don't. He can't be Mashiach. Because Mashiach is not divine. They claim he's divine. Number two, he stated all the promises of the prophets of reign of universal peace and justice had not yet been fulfilled. So the appearance of what they say, the Mashiach came, he did nothing. Didn't do anything. The whole world is full of violence and injustice. And among all the denominations, this took a lot of guts to say, the Christians were the worst. Most unjust and most warlike of all the tribes. This took a lot of guts. That's why they want to kill him now. They want to kill him. Look at this. This is really a clincher. This is amazing. Look, think of this, and this should be broadcast. It seems most strange that the creator of heaven and earth resorted to the womb of a certain Jewish lady. The creator comes back in the womb. This is wild. He grew there for 9 months and was born as an infant. Afterward, grew up and was betrayed into the hands of his enemies, who sentenced him to death and executed him. And then afterwards, he comes to life and returns to the original place. The mind of a Jew or any other person simply cannot tolerate these assertions. You have listened all your life to the priests who have filled your brain and the marrow of your bones with this doctrine, and has settled into you because you've accustomed to it. If you were hearing these ideas for the first time as a grown adult, you would never accept them, he says. You can imagine. Hashem is going to come back 9 months inside a Jewish woman to show as a baby. Can you imagine? And born as a baby, and then he's acting like a human being, and they put him in jail, and they torture him, and they put him in a cross, and that's Hashem on the cross. So the controversy, they say, was complete victory for Ramban. Everyone said it was a victory for the Ramban. Even the Christians were forced to admit that public Christianity was a disaster. I know they killed him after. I know what they did. And the king gave him 300 gold coins. Can you imagine? 300 gold coins as a gift. Because you argued so well. The king says, I never encountered a man who, while he was yet wrong, argued so well. He has to say he's wrong. So. The Dominicans nevertheless claimed the victory. And Ramban had to publish a book to show that they were wrong. Dominicans lost. Not wrong. The church is claiming they won the disputation. Because no one heard it. They're claiming Ramban lost, the Jews have to convert. So he writes a book, and that cost him in trouble. He wrote a book, and now they had a book, they could see what he wrote. They said, oh, here it is, he's a heretic, he's going to be burnt at the stake. Let's burn the Ramban. Capital charge was instituted, a formal complaint against the work, and its author was lodged with the king, King James. King James says he made a commission out of the church, and he said, Ramban, exile, not death, exile. So, for 2 years, his exile and his pamphlet was condemned to be burnt. And they burnt his book and his exile. Well, you have the book today. It's right here. You have it right here. Okay. He must want to be fined. We don't know where the money was. And the church thought this is very lenient. And they turned the 2 years of exile into perpetual exile. Mm. He's banished forever from Spain. He's not allowed to come back to Spain. He left Aragon. And was 3 years in Castile. In 1267, he made Aliyah to Yerushalayim. Not so easy. He went to Akko. And he went to Yerushalayim. And Akko, in Yerushalayim, there was nothing there. There was no synagogue. And he made a synagogue over there in the old city, which the Muslims took over a couple hundred years later, and they made it into a mosque. And only in 1967 did the Jews rebuild it into a synagogue. So that's the Ramban synagogue today. So Ramban settled in Akko. He was very, very much involved in spreading Jewish learning in Akko. He gathered this circle of students. People came in crowds to hear him. Even the Karaites came, some people say. It was to arouse the interest of Israeli Jews into the Torah. He wrote his commentary on the Torah. Imagine. Who knows what was going on those days? That people were so far away, far removed from the Torah, they couldn't understand the Torah. They didn't learn it. He wrote a commentary on the Torah for these people in Israel to learn Torah. Wow. So you can see that the level of learning in Spain was much higher than Israel. There was nothing. It was a backwater. There was hardly anyone there. No big rabbis over there. There's one big rabbi who came from France. I can't remember who. One rabbi went to Akko as well. So look what Ramban says. I left my family, I forsook my house. There with my sons and daughters, the sweet dear children I brought up on knees, I left also my soul. He left his kids behind, he left his family behind. The next one. My heart and my eyes will dwell with them forever. So let's see what he wrote. He wrote a commentary on the Talmud. Right? He wrote works of Halakha, Mishpatei Hacherem, laws of excommunication, Hilchot Bedika, examination of the lungs of an animal. Right. Torah Ta'adam, laws of mourning, and Shara Gemul. Shara Gemul, which is, we have over here, all the works translated by Shavel. Dr. Shavel translated all these works, beautiful English, but it's still very hard to understand. The Book of Resurrection and the Shara Gemul, all the future reward of a person.
And he wrote on Sefer Mitzvot also.
Yeah.
He wrote his own Sefer Mitzvot. He wrote a commentary on Rambam's Sefer Mitzvot where he says Rambam left out certain Mitzvot and he added certain Mitzvot. So he took some out, added some. Like, for example, the Mitzvot of living in Israel. Yeshivari Tzur, the Ramban. It was very big. By the way, the Ramban is the rabbi of the Gush Emunim. The settlers who take over the West Bank part of it. Who are they relying on? Ramban. Ramban says you're not allowed to leave Israel in the hands of others. Either desolate or in the hands of anyone else. You have to regain Israel. That's what they base themselves on. So really he's the father of the modern Zionist movement. Modern Zionist, not the old Zionist, modern Zionist movement. So he wrote many books. A drasha, which he wrote, he delivered in the presence of the king of Castile. Can you imagine the king came to the synagogue to visit the synagogue? Ramban gives a special drasha. Sefer Geula, the arrival of the Mashiach, where he calculates when the Mashiach is going to come. Igeret HaMusar, which is what we're talking, learning about now. Igeret HaMusar is what we're learning now. He wrote to his son, to his oldest son, Nachman. Because he's Moshe ben Nachman. His son is named after his father. So Moshe ben Nachman, Nachman ben Moshe. It goes down. It's Friday and they go down through generations. So it's father, son, father, son, father, son. So this is the book we're learning now. And you can buy this book. It's an art scroll book where this we're going to follow the same pattern of it. Based on the writings, this letter he wrote to his son. So what happened was he's in Akko. His son's back in Spain. He has two sons in Spain. So one son he wrote Igeret HaKodesh, and the other son he wrote this. So at 72 years old, he's now in Israel. After a very difficult journey, he arrives at the port of Akko in 1267, in the month of Elul. And that's the time he wrote this letter. I'm sure this letter is just a bit of serious. You can download it free on the internet. Igeret HaRamban, you look at the Igeret HaRamban, you may try Igeres HaRamban. You'll get it over here, two pages. If you want to make copies of it later on, we can make copies of it. But it's good to get the book. So 72 years old, and that's when he wrote his letter back to his son. He missed his son. Ramban truly felt he stood in Hashem's presence. And you can sense the ecstasy in this short letter. During his first Elul in Israel, he travels to Yerushalayim to spend Rosh Hashanah over there. He found a city in ruins, plundered by the brutal conquest of the Crusaders. In another famous letter to his son, Nachman, he describes the situation. What shall I tell you in regard to this land? Many are its forsaken places and great are its wasted areas. The truth of the matter is, the more sacred the place, the greater the devastation. Jerusalem is the most desolate place of all. Terrible tragedy. Jerusalem was destroyed many times. It was destroyed by the Romans, completely destroyed, wiped out. And then rebuilt by them as their Iola Capitolina. And then the Muslims settled over there, and then the Christians came, conquered it for the Muslims, destroyed it again. In his letter, he describes how he designated an abandoned house as a synagogue, and he brought a Torah scroll from the city of Shechem. Look at this. Shechem today is a Judenrein. Very dangerous area to live. You can't live there. Yeah, there's settlements, there's Yishuvim outside Shechem. Har Bracha. I have a nephew over there, but brave man. Har Bracha is a yeshuva outside Nablus. Very dangerous neighborhood. Very, very bad neighborhood. Bad neighbors. I don't live over there. So Yosef's tomb is in Shechem, and so once in a while the army organizes a visit to Yosef's tomb. Again, it's very dangerous. You don't wander around Yosef's tomb. You just go with the army and come back. That's it. There are Breslovers who sometimes go when they want to pop in, and sometimes there's trouble over there, and the army has to go and rescue them. Oh, yeah. So can you imagine, you got a Sefer Torah from Shechem. This place, there was a Jewish community in Shechem. There was a Jewish community in Gaza, we know. These are all Jewish communities. So he brings a Torah scroll from the city of Shechem. On Rosh Hashanah, Ramban delivers a sermon in that synagogue and exhorted all the few Jews who remained in Israel to be exceedingly careful, for they're like servants of the king's palace. Israel is the king's palace. You've got to be extra careful how you behave in Israel. In the 16th century, the Muslim government confiscated the synagogue and turned it into a mosque. When the old city was... It's amazing. I was in the old city. It's beautiful. The Jewish quarter is beautiful. Why? Why is it beautiful? So there's a group of tourists over there. It's not fair. Look, the Muslim quarter is so old. The Jewish quarter is brand new. They don't realize. Idiots. And the guide is not telling them. Why? Why is it so new and so brand new? Because it was destroyed totally by the Jordanians. The Jewish quarter was destroyed completely. So now, of course, it's brand new. It's rebuilt. Not because the Muslim quarter is old and the Jews are new. It's because the Muslim quarter wasn't destroyed. We were destroyed. They destroyed the whole quarter. So it was rebuilt as the synagogue of the Ramban. It's rebuilt over there. And you have the Igeret HaRamban on the wall of the Beit HaMidrash, right over there. This letter is right over there. So after his visit to Yerushalayim, he couldn't live in Yerushalayim. It was destroyed, it was desolate. He founded a synagogue over there, but he didn't live there. He lived in Akko. And he taught a number of devoted disciples. He died in 1270. So 3 years he lived in Israel. Terrible, tragic. 3 years he lived in Israel, he died. And the trouble is, we don't even know where he's buried. That's the trouble. Where is he buried? Ramban. Some people say Hebron. Some people say Haifa, Akko, Yerushalayim, four different places. Same thing with Ramchal. The Ramchal's kever is right next to Rabbi Akiva in Tiberia. But some people say he's not buried there. Who knows if he's buried? He's buried. So, some people have two kevarim. The kever Ramban here and kever Ramban over there. You don't know which one's which. One of the books written, historical book, Shalshelet HaKabbalah, of Gedalia ibn Yahya. In 1500s, he wrote a fascinating tradition concerning Ramban's death. When Ramban departed Spain, his disciples asked him, how do they know the day of his death? Ramban says, on the day of my death, a crack will appear in the tombstone on the grave of my mother. This will be a sign I've passed away. Some 4 years after his departure, one of the students found the gravestone had cracked. And they mourned for him. Wild story. So this letter was first published in Mantua in Italy, in a printing press, when it started printing, in 1623. It was later printed in the classic Musar work, which I have over here, Reshit Chochmah, by Rabbi Eliyahu de Vidas, who was a disciple of the Rav Mak, Rav Moshe Cordovero, of Rabbi Kabbalah, before the Arizal, time of the Arizal. And he has an essay over there called Shar Ha'anava, The Gate of Humility, and in that essay he quotes this whole letter. Because it's really, the letter is built around this concept of humility. So this text, which appears in those books, have been accepted as the authentic version of this letter. So there's different versions of this letter. That's the trouble. If you look at the Rabbi Chavel's work, it's a second version. And then he compares both versions. He has two versions. And then he compares both versions. And so this we're doing the first version. First version. So the concept of Musar. What is the rabbi? What is he writing to his son? He's teaching his son ethics. Musar. So very important. Ethics. Whoever talks about ethics. So they're interesting because the first works of ethics was Pirkei Avot. Which is totally a work of ethics. And Pirkei Avot is not talking about the worker. It's translated as the chapters of the fathers, but it's not really. It's more in terms of the Avot, in terms of Avot and Toldot. Like you have in the laws of Shabbat. Avot Melachot, the main categories of work. And then you have the Toldot, the subcategories of work. So these are the main principles of ethics. Avot. Pirkei Avot. The chapters of the Avot of ethics. Not subcategories, but main categories of ethics. And then you have subcategories of ethics.
Are these the ethics of the fathers?
Yes. So what we're saying is, it doesn't mean fathers. Avot does not mean fathers. It's a mistranslation. It really means... Pirkei Avot, the main principles of ethics. Psh. It's much better translation. It's not just ethics of the fathers. Because you find the fathers didn't say anything over there. He doesn't quote Avraham and Yitzchak Yaakov, who are forefathers. We talk about our fathers all the time. They're not quoted at all. The later rabbis are not our fathers. You know, all of us are descended from them. So they're our fathers. So what is it talking about? Ethics of the main categories of ethics. So this concept of Musar was started there. It's interesting. The rabbis put it in the book in the Seder Nezikin, in the order of damages. To avoid damages, you've got to be ethical. So the person says, yeah, I want to keep the letter of the law. I'm not going to be on the letter of the law. So what happens is, you keep the letter of the law, you're obviously going to break the letter of the law. Because there's no boundaries. Rabbis always gave you boundaries. Put a fence around the Torah. So ethics, if you learn ethics, you're going to keep far away. Right? The person's going to be a chassid. The person's going to be pious. What's a pious person? The person's making sure they're not going to damage anyone else. That's number one. They have a dog in the house to make sure it's not going to bite anyone. That's a chassid. He has a gun in the house. Make sure it's locked up and whatever. He's got the code, whatever it is. That's number one. Number one idea of a chassid is don't damage anyone. That's number one. Number one. Priority number one. Ethics. So ethics refers to self-control. Refers, which is so hard. Control oneself. Ezu gibor, kvesh yitzro. Okay, that's pretty careful. Who is mighty? You control yourself. Self-control. Number two is perfection. Very hard to perfect yourself. That's very hard. That's part of Musar, which is trying to perfect your traits. Try to perfect the traits. The Vilna Gaon says in his book, Evan Shlema. Must read. You got to read Evan Shlema. We did it once. Monday nights. We had in our series of Monday nights. It's been 26 years of Monday nights. We did Evan Shlema. If you haven't done it, read it. Read it. Small book by the Vilna Gaon. Must read. He said, our whole purpose in the world, each one of us, our whole purpose in the world is to fix our traits. Our purpose in this world is to fix our traits. The Vilna Gaon said that. If I said that, everyone would laugh at me. Vilna Gaon said it, not me. Vilna Gaon. It's not a joke. If he says our purpose in this world is to fix our traits, that's what we're doing in this world. We're brought into this world to fix our traits. So a person's going to learn Musar. It's so hard to... Listen. The hardest traits to change are the ones which you have from when you're a kid. I think of myself, I'm still working on it. How long will I work on this today? And I'm not winning. It's a trait which is so ingrained into you. That's probably your mission. The Arizal says, if you find you have a negative trait, that's what you're here for, to fix. Our purpose in the world is to fix that trait. Imagine. That's our purpose. But fix the negatives. So that's what you need. How do you know what a purpose, what's my purpose in the world? My purpose is to fix my traits. Which one? Your worst one. That's the one you have to work on. That's one of my purpose has to work on. So this concept of Musar, self-discipline, ethics, self-control, perfection of character, purification of one's motives, chovat levav, obligations of the heart. Just like there's duties to do mitzvot, there's duties to think in a certain way, obligations of the heart. So these are lofty themes, which are brought down in very, very brief, concise. It's only a letter, look at this. How much can you write in a letter? You can see. Imagine he's writing a letter to his son. He weighed every single word because he wants his letter to have maximum impact on his son. You know, it's not like he couldn't write a book because he can't send a book in mail. There's no mail in those days. You get a guy to do you a favor, take a letter. You know, the guy's going all the way from Israel to Spain. So listen, my baggage is full. How much can I carry? Here, take a letter. Not going to give you a book. Not going to give you a Megillah. I'm going to give you a little letter. That's it. Okay, I can take a letter. It's like nothing's changed really. You get Israel, I can take a letter. You take some medication. You know. How much can I take? Now you're only allowed one suitcase, that's it. How much can I take? So, Ramban's philosophy of Judaism is complex. Nevertheless, a theme that penetrates his thought. This is a midrash. Very, very interesting midrash. The whole purpose of the Torah is to perfect ourselves. Midrash brings down. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had a student. His name is Rav. Rav was a gadol. Rav was a genius. Rav became the chief rabbi of Sura. Sura Nardea, right? Rav was in Sura and Shmuel was in Nardea. So he becomes chief rabbi. He's a student of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And so he asks, does Hashem really care? It's an amazing midrash. It's very wild. It's not me, people don't think it's me. It's not me, it's the Midrash. Midrash asks the question, that's what he's quoting. He doesn't quote the whole Midrash, it's interesting. He doesn't quote the whole Midrash. It's good also. I'm quoting you the Midrash. The Midrash says that he asked the question, Why did Hashem say to kill the animal from the front, not from the back? And it's a big question. You know why? Because by birds, there's a law in the Beit HaMikdash that there's melika. What's melika? Melika is the Kohen with a thumbnail break the bird's neck from the back. And it's kosher. You can eat it. You offer the blood on the altar, you eat it. So he asked the question. Midrash asked the question. Why does Hashem say to kill the animal from the front and not the back? Good question, right? So the Midrash says, Hashem gave the mitzvot, not because it makes sense, logical sense. He wants to purify us. Hashem wants us to be disciplined, and the act of doing mitzvot, which is disciplining you, will perfect you. To learn discipline. Such a key midrash. It's such a key midrash. So Ramban brings this down in his commentary of Devarim. That the mitzvot are given to us to purify us, to make us better people. The mitzvot expel the impurities from the hearts of people. Men's nature, if left unbridled, can become harsh and coarse. Therefore, the Almighty designed mitzvot which would accustom the head, heart to compassion and sensitivity. So if you're doing shechita in that way, it's to inculcate sensitivity to you, inculcate compassion to you. When you display kindness towards animals, again, chewing away the mother bird. Why did Hashem say destroy the mother bird? And spill the young. Hashem wants to inculcate compassion into you. It's not Hashem's compassion. You don't have to say it's Hashem's compassion. Hashem is trying to make me compassionate. Poor mother bird. Not only that, Jesus didn't even have respect for inanimate objects. Cover the chala. Make kiddush on. What a wild halakha, right? Cover the challah, you make kiddush on wine. It's not kavod, you bring the bread before the wine. Have some kavod. It's tarif habriot. And that's one of the reasons Ramban brings also not to eat non-kosher animals. Why? Because they have this wild animal spirit. You do wild animals, you become a wild animal. It's going to go into your bloodstream. In a similar vein, the mitzvah which you commanded us to remember Hashem's miracles, ot. What's an ot? A sign to enable you to remember Hashem's miracles. Keep Shabbat, why? Because I created heaven and earth for 6 days and the rest of the seventh. Miracle. Keep Shabbat because I took you out of Israel. Miracles. It's an ot to remember miracles. Who for? Not for him, not for God, for us. We should miracles. Again, it's for us. All the mitzvot are for us, not for God. So we're doing a mitzvah for God, but really it's reflexive. It's making us better people. That's the purpose. Hashem says, do it for me, because when you do it for me, you're going to make yourself better. But really, it's for you. Make yourself. So if I tell you, you know, my mother used to do this all the time. Don't eat for your sake, eat for my sake. Yeah, you know, she says, you're not eating. But mommy, I'm hungry. But don't eat for your sake, eat for my sake. Why? That's what Hashem's saying. Don't eat, you know, you can't understand this concept. Do it for your sake. Well, I suppose that, you know, why this mitzvah? How's it going to affect me? Just do it for my sake, Hashem says. Okay, I'll do it for your sake, Hashem. Hashem says, good, now it's affecting you. We're going to stop here. We're going to continue with Hashem next week. But if anyone wants, there's a good website to get this from Igeret Ramban. I have a copy here. You can download it. Igeret Ramban. Look under Igeret Ramban. רבי חנין אמלה קשר, אמר רצה קדש ברוך הוא, לזו שפי המשמעת פה שלי אמר, אדוני חפש מעצקו, יגדיר צורה ויעדיר. אמן.